Good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and guess what? I brought you another interesting show today. So go ahead and share the show because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. For any of you who were with me yesterday was an incredible show. I had some incredible guests. But I lost my internet three times. Why? I do not know. It was just Monday. It was just one of those days. But guess what? I am hardwired today. Nothing is going to go wrong today. I'm making sure I am going to be able to bring you an amazing show. One of the things that you heard me speak about during the course of Roundtable Talk Show is I usually get four women and one man as a guest. Maybe I get five women as guests on the show. But today's show has never happened. It has never happened in the history of ever. I'm bringing you guys today, gentlemen today, who are going to share their perspectives on the world. I was told the women love to be on the show because they love to talk. But I'm sure the gentlemen we have today, they're going to share their views on what's going on in the world. Our first guest is Mr. Philip Hoard. And Philip is the Director of Operations for Hoardly Professional Organization. Good morning, Philip. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you doing?
I am wonderful. And you have a partnership with your wife in business, but she was unable to join us today, correct?
Correct. Yeah, she's out trying to figure out what to do with this world.
I think she probably got that vibe, that women's intuition that there were no women allowed today. Just me. Me, I guess for some reason.
Think that's what happened exactly. That's funny. She just knew that it needed an all men show here on today. So that's hilarious.
Yes. So, Philip, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Sure. So we own a professional organizing company. It's about 5 years old. We have 30 employees, and we can service in home in seven states, except for right now, we're not in any homes in any of the states. But it's kind of allowed us to launch virtual organizing, which has really been an interesting pivot. And now we're helping people in India, Ireland, Canada, Central America, where we've never been able to service before. But it's all about organizing, getting your home organized is what we offer. And we've done a lot of media things and a lot of social outreach to kind of help people get organized during this time. And it's been quite interesting. I do all the business side of things. So I'm the talker, and my wife is the genius behind it all. She is in charge of all the things organizing, so training and hiring and making sure that clients are happy. But it's a perfect collaborative because we do nothing the same. She's the organized person. Of course, I'm organized as well, but I'm not the organizer, just the business side.
Wow, that's interesting. Times a long time ago, times have definitely changed because in the past it was always kind of the opposite, I think. Maybe it's just me. I am sexist. I always tell people that.
Yeah, no, she's the boss for sure. With our, she started the company, and I just came on. After I was working on another tech startup, and then I came on over because she grew it so fast and so well that she just needed all the help she could get, and it was a pretty fun transition.
What exactly? Because I'm learning, one of the things that I've learned during this whole process is new verbiage. Like I'm learning, like there are new words for things. Before you used to go to the grocery store, now you make a supply run. Like everything's different these days. I'm learning so many different things. I've learned from the government that you can get loans that do not have to be repaid. I learned that too. I don't know what that means, but what is a virtual home organizer?
I have a lot more to say about the PPP than virtual home organizing. No, I'm just kidding. Virtual organizing is it's kind of a coaching. It's kind of a seminar where you'll get one-on-one session with one of our pros, or other organizing companies are offering the service, but how we do it is it's a 1 hour consultation, and we run through our process, and we run through a video of your home. You kind of show us around, and then we give you the tools and the steps and the processes and kind of lead you on your way. And then what we do is send you some follow-up, making sure that you're following the steps and being held accountable, and then ask you to maybe call us back or purchase a couple products, bins, baskets, whatever you might need to actually get the job done. And we just kind of hold you accountable through Zoom, you know, and it's all of our strategies. It's all of the professional organizing strategies and tools and verbiage, but it's just not our hands, because usually we're a very on hand, in-home perspective or type of business. But now it's all of that brains and stuff, but no hands from our team. So we've learned to become teachers and coaches, which is interesting, because a lot of our organizers are used to just coming in and just getting the job done and talking a lot less and being very efficient. And now they're learning how to talk and coach people through organizing, and people are very receptive. The only difference really is you got to do the work yourself, which a lot of our clientele isn't used to.
I would be one of the clientele that isn't used to that at all. That's too much like right for me to fix it, but it's wonderful for your business, because now you're focusing on brain power as opposed to brute strength, which is wonderful. But in your business, you're trying to help people to a certain extent get rid of different things. Our next guest, Mr. Charlie Hardy, is helping people to find things. He is a self-taught programmer who has built the world's largest scavenger hunt website. Good morning, Charlie. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on today.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining us. Tell me about this site. It sounds interesting. An online scavenger hunt.
Yeah. And so Let's Roam is, we have scavenger hunts all over the world. And before this pandemic, you would go out and explore your own neighborhood, connect with others, and go out. But now during the pandemic, we had to pivot quickly, and we had to find alternative ways. So we kind of threw spaghetti at the wall, and surprisingly, it all stuck. So we launched our virtual game nights, which is similar to Zoom, where you can play trivia and other things online and charades in your own home. Mm-hmm. And then also the in-home scavenger hunt. So now you're finding and creating experiences inside your home with the people you love doing these great things. And this Sunday, actually, we're trying to beat the world record for the world's largest scavenger hunt, with everyone participating, coming together as a community to try to make something awesome together. And it's not just me. I've actually, our team, it's full of, it's about mostly women, actually. So our team's an awesome, awesome team that have people that are helping me do the marketing and helping working together to talk with our customers to see what they want and see what they are trying to do during these times.
That's interesting. I don't even really know specifically what's going to happen on Sunday, but I already want to be a part of it. I just heard the world's largest, and I'm like, I want in. I love just being a part of different things. But what is the actual process in a scavenger hunt? Do you find things in your home? What does that look like?
Yeah, you find things and you create memories. So okay. We use the cell phone not as a way to look into it and as a part of it. Normally when you have an application, we have our app, it's the forefront, but we want it to be a tool to help you discover. So rather than using the phone as a way to really dive into it, it's a way for us to connect on one-on-one. So we're looking for different ways to dress up or have fun. So for one of the challenges, one of the first challenges is go to your closet. You have 60 seconds for you and your family to change into the wackiest outfit. The wackier, the better. And then for the rest of this hour-long scavenger hunt, you're doing all these different challenges and things you just wouldn't think to do in your own home. And so it creates this very memorable experience and something in a way where you just wouldn't do. And it's totally new and exciting in that way.
Okay, now I'm just thinking, in my closet, I don't have anything that I personally would define as wacky. Like, what are some of the wackiest things that people already have in their closets prepared for this scavenger hunt?
Yeah, well, that's also the fun of it. You don't get to choose what you wear. It's the other participant too. So they're selecting hats and other things for you. So you if you went with your family, you select that maybe a hat for your kid, and they select something for you. And then so you come, and that's just one of the challenges, by the way. That's one small challenge. There's over 100 challenges like that. So maybe another one is reenact a scene from The Lion King, and you doing it in less than 5 minutes. And so your house gets totally turned upside down, but that's part of the fun of it too. And it's just getting outside your comfort zone. One of our core values is experiencing new things and seeing these new things. And just because we're in quarantine doesn't mean we can't do that. It's a limit on us, but it's something that we can push, and we can still have fun. We can still learn. We can still explore, even if it's in your own home.
Okay, so I guess I misunderstood initially your definition of wacky. I thought it was like a costume that was in the closet. You have to grab this costume and wear it. So what you're saying more is you mix and match like this wardrobe for other people. So other people are like, what are they wearing, more or less, correct?
Yeah. And that's one of the things about it. And it's just all the challenges, our team of writers it's designed to help you explore and connect. So that connection aspect is huge. How can you make two people at home when normally you're watching TV or doing something or maybe cooking together, all ways where you're living together, but how can you make someone with an app connect with each other? And that's what it's all about. If everything we do, from our virtual game nights to breaking the world record, it's about helping people connect.
And they should actually take the things that they haven't been using and learn to declutter them. That's a perfect scavenger game. Let's find the clutter.
I think we can partner on that, actually.
I love it.
Charlie, I'm actual treasure hunter. And I found literally millions and millions of dollars worth of treasures in my life. Yeah.
Oh, that is one of my dreams, to have a treasure hidden. And originally, when we were going to break the world record before COVID, we were going to hide a huge sum of cash in somewhere in the U.S. But now we've changed up our process. So future time, we'd really like to have everyone be a treasure hunter like that too.
Now it's Charlie, just finding the Bitcoin.
I'm a unique treasure hunter. I've given all my treasures away to special people.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Yes. That's... So I would find these treasures, put them in the trunk of my car. And then when I see someone do something exceptional in the world, like be extra kind, I would go to my trunk, bring them the exact treasure that they needed in their life. And some of these were very valuable. It wasn't about value. It was about what they would need at that particular time in their life to move them forward. Yes.
Well, that's beautiful. Yeah. One of our core values is also make a positive impact. And it sounds like you're doing that. And I think everyone doing that, just these small impacts, can lead to such a much more fulfilling and fun life for not just the people, but everyone in the world.
Yeah.
Yes. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Richard K. London, who is sharing his stories of helping people with his treasure hunt. And before I find out how to get on this list of special people, because I definitely want to be on this list to get the treasures from the car. Like, do I get credit for the Roundtable Talk Show? But Richard is a mentor and a trainer, and he's going to discuss part of the seven faces of intention. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with everyone today. So when I was a little boy, God said to me, you had to be the smartest person on earth and you had to be the strongest person on the earth. So I went to school for 43 and a half years and I'm a fifth degree black belt, 10th level. So I accomplished that goal at a very young age. And so what I do in the world now, I actually was in retirement. I came out to save the world because being a person who not only has great wisdom, I'm a person who can see the future. And I saw what needed to happen in the future. And I'm going to share quickly with the universe. First of all, there's a new earth that has been established during this so-called virus. And listeners out there, you need to take an attitude in your life. Everything is normal. As soon as you're saying I'm quarantined, we live in a virus world, you tend to live in that world. The only thing that's changed in my world is when I walk out, I wear a mask, and I only wear a mask because if I don't, I'm not allowed to go in the various stores that I need to go and do the things that I need to do. So I have 200 .com companies that I own that educate people in the world. So what I do is I take the best doctors in the world and I bring them into divine medicine, best lawyers, divine law. So it's a process of bringing people to the highest level of effectiveness in the 21st century. So there's three cleansings going on here on the earth. The number one, Mother Earth. Mother Earth is happy, exuberant about humans not driving, humans in their home. The skies are beautiful. The animals are happy. The plants are happy. The other cleansing that's going on is humans themselves. Unfortunately, millions have died and millions will die. Every year, approximately 60 million people on this earth die out of 8 billion people. So there's a cleansing of humans, trials and tribulation. The other cleansing is our economic system. So in the near future, 90% of all businesses in the world are going to be home-based businesses. Bricks and mortar are going to be 10%. Over half the malls in the world will be closing in the near future. So it leaves a lot of opportunities for humans in the world. Number one industry in the world are going to be the wellness industry. Anything that has to do with health and wisdom, wellness is going to expand 10,000-fold. The next is environmental. The next one is education. And the fourth, the technology world. Everybody's going to be doing business online and in some form in the future. And that's going to leave lots of opportunities for people to be creative. So what's going to happen in the 21st century, since 90% of all the businesses are going to be home-based, people are going to be extremely creative. So even though we are going in a recession, your life doesn't have to be a recession. Let me explain to everybody. Your past is in stone, but your future is in paper. Mm-hmm. And I can see everybody's future. So it's in paper. Based on the decisions you make in your life, you can easily change your life. So imagine the seven faces of attention. It's a big secret. So everything I say, everything that Philip says, Andrew says, Jim says, Charlie says, has an intention behind it. So imagine everybody lives at a home or apartment, a condo, or wherever they live. You only have one foundation. When you use the seven faces of intention, guess what? You have seven foundations. So it gives you the energy and the power to push your life forward. Does anyone remember the book, The Secret?
Yes, I wasn't a fan of The Secret, so I'd love to hear your view.
Okay, so I was the first person in the entire world to use The Secret. Age 4 years old, we were poor. I had this bad habit. I liked to eat good food. So I walked on the boardwalk close to where I lived, and I said I wanted pennies, pockets filled with pennies. Not a stupid kid. The next day, I asked for nickels. Next day, I asked for dimes. Next day, I asked for quarters. Each day, my pockets were filled with money. By the end of the week, I went to paper money. So I would find white envelopes filled with 200, 400, 600, 800 consistently. When it rained, I would follow the gutter where I lived, and I would pick money out of the gutter, take it home, put it in the oven, and dry it. So why did it happen to me? What was different with me than any other child? First of all, my faith is empirical. So that's the reason many people who read the book, The Secret, didn't understand the law of attraction, because if you don't have great faith, and especially empirical faith, it's not going to work. And empirical faith is faith that grows every second of the day, every minute of the day, every hour. So it's different than faith where, you know, in the world like we live now, people are going, oh, I need a job, I need money, I need this and I need that. That's not faith. Yeah. Because whatever you believe in God, whoever it is, Buddha, whatever people believe, everything is about energy. Everything is about sound and everything is numbers. Everything has to add up correctly. So at 4 years old, I had this giant energy, that giant energy. So by the time I was 8 years old, I was earning $330,000 a year at 8 years old. And I did that from 8 to 13. So all my life, whatever people believe to be impossible, it's always possible for me. And I like to do the impossible, and I do it daily. So believe it or not, listeners, I control time, because I was told never to believe what your parents say, what teachers say, what religious leaders say. I didn't believe anybody. I trusted the intuition and my connection to God. And it has never, ever failed me. So it's allowing me to create at the highest level. So let me grab the seven faces of intention and quickly share it with the listeners. Okay. So the first and the most important one is divine love. Every human being on this earth grows up and they actually experience cultural love. That's the love that your parents knew, your grandparents, the teachers knew, the people around you knew. Doesn't really work, cultural love. Then there was unconditional love. Unconditional love is the modern day of loving, but guess what? Everybody puts conditions on it. I'll love you if you do this, I'll love you if you do that. So it doesn't work. The only love in one of the seven faces of attention is divine love, because it's pure and it has a greater vibration. And the numbers are greater. So everything in life has to do about creating great numbers. Okay, divine beauty says it all. Because of this virus, we have a lot more divine beauty in our life. Okay, expansion of your divine heart. Anyone who spends their life in mind chatter, you can never be creative with mind chatter. You have to rid your mind of all thoughts whatsoever. The only things I think about are candy, ice cream, cookies, sex, all the normal stuff. I'm never thinking about anything. The next, divine abundance. Imagine divine abundance. You know, when I was in my 20s, everybody said I should invest in gold. So I said, why invest? So I put together a consortium. We own 7 gold mines we've had for 40 years now. So there's a different way of thinking out of the box, and it's thinking big instead of small. The fifth is divine harmony. Imagine having a foundation of divine harmony. Everything, when you add the word divine to it, it adds a greater number, a greater vibration, and it works better in your life. Divine gratitude. Anybody in the world, the more you're in gratitude, the more you're going to receive. Absolutely. You have to be joy and gratitude. And the seventh, divine creativity and co-creating with God. So the seventh foundation, you actually learn to co-create with God. Has anybody experienced miracles in their life?
I definitely have. This is very interesting. I wrote them all down, the different examples. I also love the fact that you mentioned The Secret, because when it came out, I was actually attending Agape Reverend Michael's Beckwith's church in Culver City. And I walked away from that because everybody kept talking about the law of attraction, the law of attraction. And I'm like, okay, but basically the tenets of what he was saying was scriptural. I mean, scripture tells you that asking you shall receive, knocking the door shall open. So when you take that principle and you turn it into a secret for $29.99, I wasn't a fan of that. But there's so much that you mentioned. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. We have more guests on the show, but I'm definitely going to give you an opportunity to go further, because I was learning so much, and I definitely have to figure out again how to get on that list with the 200.coms, because I want to hang out with you, Richard. I want to be that kid who makes $300,000 a year. Okay, I don't make, I know all of you do, but I don't make $300,000 a year now. So I'm going to go talk to you, Richard. And you talked about having some of the best health practitioners, doctors, and lawyers. So I want to introduce our next guest, Mr. Andrew Cantaguglia.
There you go.
I kind of got it. I've been practicing it in silence during the show. But you are a lawyer. You are an advisor. You've been working with a lot of different businesses. One of the key words that I keep hearing people say, but I also heard Philip mention and Charlie mention, is the word pivot. During this time, so many businesses either don't know how to pivot, want to find out how to pivot. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Andrew, what you do.
Yeah, you bet. I'm an investor and a business advisor and lawyer. I'm the owner and proprietor of the Cantaguglia Law Firm here in Denver, Colorado. Essentially, what I do is I counsel business owners and online influencers to help them make strategic decisions so they don't really run into legal problems. I like to protect businesses on the front end so they don't take it in the back end. I have a real educational approach to the way I practice law. My objectives here are really to sort of make myself unnecessary to my clients, which sounds sort of counterintuitive for an attorney, but I really want my clients to be educated about the issues that affect them in their businesses so they don't make mistakes and end up having legal problems down the line. That's really sort of my objective. It's very proactive. I think that people should engage their lawyers much like they do their doctors and their health, which is, you know, you don't wait to have the heart attack before you go to the doctor. I think people need to, you know, avoid the lawsuits by meeting with lawyers and engaging with lawyers and interacting with attorneys and seeking legal advice before problems actually arise. I've seen so many legal issues pop up that can be avoided just with a little bit of counseling and advice on the front end of everything, you know, and then that way these businesses don't run into these problems later on. To address sort of your issue about pivoting, and I know that Philip and Charlie sort of mentioned this a little bit in terms of how they're doing this. What I've seen really with many of my clients is sort of this tiered approach in terms of whether they've been able to really consume the environment that we're in and really flourish in it, or whether they've had to make adjustments and pivot. And unfortunately, some who haven't been able to make the adjustment and are just falling out. A big component of my practice is risk management. And so what I try to do is help my clients understand and view the risks that they have in their businesses, what they can do to make pivots in their business today in today's economic environment, and really be able to flourish and become more profitable as they move forward.
Did you see any specific resource? Did you create any specific strategies or resources for the businesses that have been going through this global pandemic?
It's funny you bring that up, because I represent so many online businesses, as well as brick and mortar businesses. The hard part has been taking the brick and mortar businesses and trying to transition them into an online component. I see that happen even with law firms, where they have, you know, lawyers love going to their offices. Jim, you probably appreciate this. And, you know, financial planners like to go to their offices. They like to have their space. You know, bringing everything home and adjusting everything from home is sort of counterintuitive to what we like to do, which is engage and be in groups of people. So the online businesses have sort of sat back and gone, yeah, remember about 6 months ago when you were laughing at me saying, hey, what are you doing running an online business? Everybody needs a brick and mortar business. What's this online thing? You're just sitting around in your PJs all day doing nothing. And now all of a sudden, here we are in the middle of this pandemic, and all the online businesses are going like, huh, remember what you told me 6 months ago? Now who's laughing?
So, yes, I'm one of those people, because I built my first website in 1994. And when I first built my website, everyone told me I was lazy. They said, if you don't go to job, if you don't leave the house, you're just lazy. It wasn't about how much money I earned, or it was simply, there was an image of you have to go to work. And even before the pandemic, when you look around in, say, 2019, most top executives spent great deals of time working remotely. There's so many, you know, and they will look at you like, oh, you're actually going to work? Like, we don't do that anymore. So it has, I've seen the progress where people laughed at me to now, like you said, we're the ones who getting that, like, I tried to tell you 26 years ago that this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm the type of person, though, I mean, I can work from home. When I started my company in 2007, I wanted to design it in a fashion where I would have available to me the opportunities of being able to work from home or really anywhere remotely in the world if I chose to. So for me, it wasn't that much of a change, but many of my friends and many of these other businesses never really thought about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some brick and mortar businesses you just can't take online. You can't take an auto body shop online. You can't take, you know, a company that produces food or a restaurant or anything like that and take it online. There are ways to adjust it a little bit, but you can't bring everything online. I mean, one of the big things that we're seeing in the legal community is the change in how court appearances are being done and how people are engaging with going to court, because the court system across the country is pretty much shut down. You can't go to court and litigate anything. You're appearing by WebEx, you're appearing by phone. You know, the environment in terms of how legal disputes is being managed has changed dramatically. You know, but for a transactional attorney like me, this, you know, being online isn't that difficult. I can hop on a Zoom call, I can talk to my clients online and really help them, you know, manage their issues and making sure that their contracts are in place, making sure that they have, you know, forms and things in place for their customers that they can all bring online and manage it in that respect. But if your company involves a physical product that you might actually have to go and pick up, you're going to have a tough time unless you can somehow, you know, bridge the gap between your product and being able to sell it online. But I think most companies that, you know, that are selling products have, you know, a web online presence in some form or fashion. But now you run into another issue, which is competing with the Amazons, the Shopify's, and some of these bigger, you know, businesses that are, you know, really cornering the market.
We were having that discussion. I'm going to let you speak, Philip. I see you coming in there. But,
I got an awesome question, but go ahead.
No, I just want to say, I just want to agree with what Andrew was saying, because we were having the discussion about Ross. You know, in case you, you know, can't tell, I'm a woman. I love to shop. I told you I'm sexist. And I love going to Ross, you know, Ross clothing store. But when they shut down, I realized, because I didn't know, I didn't really pay attention. I just went to Ross, that there really was no Ross.com. There's a landing page, but there was no e-commerce aspect to be able to make purchases. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't know if Ross is going to be able to come back, because everybody else, at the very least, when you look at TJ Maxx or whoever, they, you can at least go to their store and purchase online. Philip, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to ask Andrew, like, do you think that there's a difference in reactive or proactive pivots? Like, so proactive pivots being like YouTube used to be a dating service, and now it turns proactively to a online, you know, video and then a platform. But then there's businesses that are reactive, like Hoarderly, my business, that we are being reactive because we were forced to shut down in home. Is there a big difference? Are there different terms for these pivots that are being made, like proactive versus reactive, or what would you call the difference in those pivots?
Yeah, absolutely. What I see is, you know, businesses that had to change from being not online, you know, like your company, where you would go into people's homes and you had to be, you know, touchy-feely on everything, to now sort of an online model. When you didn't have the online model at the beginning, it wasn't really your business plan. It wasn't how, you know, it wasn't, hey, we're going to build this company and we're going to base it around virtual reality. We're going to send our customers like Warby Parker a camera, and they get to go around their entire house and they get to film it and then send it back to us, and we give them feedback. You didn't design your company that way. Yours was more of a coaching and consulting business, where it was, let me come into your home and sit down with you and do it this way and engage with your customer really sort of hands-on. That pivot to moving your business from that stage into an online stage, I think, is a bigger pivot than saying, hey, we're online and we're doing this type of coaching, but now there seems to be a need for crisis management. So it kind of is like us. If you declutter your life, you declutter your mind, and now we can sort of get into a mental health component of things. You can maybe do a slight pivot internally within the system that you've already brought, to the game. So I really think it's a component of the systems and the processes you had in place at the beginning, and where your systems and processes are in place now, and really the degree of the adjustment that you had to make. So yes, as I had mentioned early on, I identify these five different tiers of where businesses were before the pandemic and then where they are now. And the issue, one being, hey, I live in an online world. This change isn't a change for me. I just have more customers than I know what to do with. Now I need to, you know, worry about things internally. What do I do? Too much work versus the, oh my God, I'm in the tier 4 or 5 and I'm going out of business. What can I do to bring myself up into one of these other tiers and still be profitable, or better yet, just stay afloat. And what I see people trying to do is really manage this sort of staying, you know, afloat aspect of things. So you can, you know, you're hoping that everything is going to go back to some type of normal. It'll never be how it was 6 months ago, but now being able to make these adjustments moving forward, you know, when you would go into Red Robin restaurant with your kids, I don't know if you do, but I do with my kids. You know, it was crowded. You had tables really close to one another, and it was how many people can we get in? How many people can we serve? How many people can we rotate through in a short period of time to maximize our revenue? And that was sort of the revenue model, as many people, as many turnovers as we can in that amount of time. Now you're going to have to cut those numbers in half. You're not going to have as high a turnover. You're not going to have as many people. And so revenue is going to go down. So now how do companies then compensate for that? Well, they have to cut back on their employees. They have to cut back on their deliveries. They have to cut back on the number of people. So their food, their food consumption is going to go down. There's a lot of different factors that go into play when you're making these types of evaluations. So
that's great information. Thank you, Andrew. Everybody's been amazing. Are you still with us? I know you're sitting back there so patiently waiting. I want to introduce our final guest, Mr. Jim Poplava, who is president of Financial Sense Wealth Management. How are you doing, Jim?
I am doing fabulous.
You look like it. I love your office. Can I have a desk in your office?
Well, there's a few chairs here.
I saw them. That's why I was starting to ask it. I'm like, wait a minute. There's room for me in Jim's office. It's like, yeah, West Wing.
I know. I essentially started a wealth management firm back in the early 80s. We're sort of a specialized boutique. We manage money for wealthy families and individuals. So we're not... A big firm. We manage about $600 million, which on Wall Street, that's not a lot of money today. But, you know, I've heard a couple comments come up, which kind of applies to what we do. I heard the word pivot or change. And I used to do talk radio and television. I did talk radio for about 2 decades, and then I did television. I was a financial anchor in about the middle of the 90s, you mentioned you were on the web. I had a guy that worked for me, and he told me about something called the internet. This was in 1992, before browsers and anything like that. So we hired a guy to program a site, and I would do a broadcast on the stock market at the end of the day. Unfortunately, the only people to listen to it were my family, so not much of an audience back then. But in the year 2000, one of the guys that was at the local radio station, I was doing drive time radio, and he says, why don't we put this on your website? And I said, well, how would we do that? And he said, I got a digital recorder. And he said, I'll just record it, load it up to your website. So beginning in 2000, I began doing my daily podcast, whether podcast now, but we began doing a show in 2000. And it's taken off since. The thing that I have found that I really enjoy is our audience is much wider than what I did local. We have listeners all around the globe, international listeners, and we have clients around the country versus just San Diego. But one of the things I've heard the word pivot, we manage money pivoting. We are active managers. A lot of our industry today uses models, and you come in, you give somebody your goal, and they say, okay, here's your pie chart. We're going to put so much in the stock market, so much in the bond market, and that's what you're going to do. We do things differently. We pivot. And as a result of pivoting, we pivoted in February, got out of the stock market, and avoided the big downturn that happened very quickly. But, you know, it's interesting that we live in this world right now. Here we are doing a show. All of us are zooming in, and this is something that we employ in our business. We call it high tech, high touch. So we do wealth management with a lot of our customers who around the country, and we do it just like we're doing now. So if I'm talking to you about your finances, your kids' education, your estate plan, it's so much more personal if I'm sitting there looking at you like I'm looking at all of you guys now. And the other thing that I thought was rather interesting, and I had no idea at the time this was going to happen, but after 9/11, we took events, and especially this began in 1999. And Andrew, I don't know if you saw this in your business, but in 1999, you remember Y2K?
Oh, yeah.
Our business, the SEC was coming in. We had to be Y2K compliant with our computers, Y2K with our software. And then about a year and a half later, we had 9/11. So we took emergency steps to operate remotely. And believe it or not, for living in San Diego, when it comes to weather, anything that's bad happening in weather, hurricanes, tornadoes, that's something that never happens in San Diego. I mean, we have perfect weather until 2007, when almost a third of the city caught on fire. As a result of that emergency step, we were able to transition from being in an office because it was closed down, guarded by National Guard, and we operated remotely within 3 hours of evacuating the city. And that has come into play again now with COVID, because we've been operating remotely now for about 3 months as a staff. We have about 16 people and we operate remotely. But the key thing in our business going forward, which I agree with a lot of the comments made here, is being able to pivot. A lot of the trends that we see in place investment-wise that were in place prior to COVID are going to accelerate. You heard the word about online retailing, brick and mortar. What's doing well right now? You have Walmart, you have Target, you have Costco. A lot of those stores that have made the transition to online business, a lot of the brick and mortar stores that haven't made that transition are suffering right now. A lot of them are filing for bankruptcy. I personally see the day in the next year or two where you're going to see Amazon come in just as they did with Whole Foods, and they're going to come in and buy some of these brick and mortar stores, and they're going to reshape them with an online presence. So pivoting is a key part of our business. We have to do it all the time.
And I think that we need to also distinguish, Jim, sort of the I think there's two different ways that companies can pivot. They can pivot internally by changing the way that they operate and they do business versus changing the product that the company is offering because those services are no longer available. So like, you know, you would take like Philip's example where he can no longer go into homes to actually help coach and manage people and getting rid of their clutter to the way that he is offering his services. So there's a pivot internally. He's still offering the same service. He's just offering it in a different way. And then you look at it also like from Charlie's standpoint, where it used to be, let's go out into the city and let's go find things to now, what can we do? And I can imagine the brainstorming sessions that you guys had, Charlie, sitting down with your group of people, like what crazy shit can we, oops, sorry. what crazy stuff can we get people to be doing in their homes while we're going through all of this? So, you know, it's you know, you have to look at it different ways. And, you know, what products are you offering? What pivot do you have to make there? And then also the way that you're actually doing business.
Yeah, one of the things that we're doing now, and especially we've started two new products. One is on income, because we're looking at interest rates today that are zero, a money market fund. So a lot of our wealthy clients are business owners. They manage keep large amounts of corporate cash that's earning zero right now. So we've just started a corporate cash management fund for large companies. One of our clients, we're managing $50 million of the corporate cash of the company because they're getting zero versus 1 or 2%. The other one that we've just come up with is an income fund. You take a lot of people that are retired, you get Social Security. If you're lucky, maybe you have a pension. But what do you do when interest rates have come from 3% and 4% and a 10-year treasury note is now about 0.6%? What does that do to your living? What does that do to your income? And so we've come up with a strategy and a new fund that actually delivers income to people that basically need it to live.
You know, I agree with everything about the concept of pivoting in the world, but there's another area that masses need to consider. First of all, in the future, there's going to be complex problems, really complex problems. This virus that everybody's experienced, unfortunately, I'm sorry to tell everybody, there's going to be virus after virus. I'm not going to tell you why, but there will be, absolutely. So as people have expressed, the way we live now is not going to be like in February. February is my birthday. I had a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful birthday. So it's going to be a different world. It's a new earth. So one of the things that's going to work for the
opportunity. My birthday, Richard, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I hear you because my birthday was the 31st of March. And my birthday was the worst birthday in history. So yes.
So multiple streams of income is really the key to the financial future of humans here on Earth. You have to have multiple streams of income. I have tens of streams of incomes, but I recommend at least three streams of income because humans are pretty complex. You could come up with three great ideas that you could make into an online business that gives you greater balance, greater security, having multiple streams versus having all your eggs in one basket. And remember, many, many complex problems in the future, and humans are going to solve those problems. And the online business is about solving problems. People have needs, and all the businesses, Costco solves a problem. Kmart, all these companies, they solve problems. By the way, TJ Maxx, Ross's, Marshall's, when I was living in the States, my favorite places to go with my daughter. I bought all of her clothes there. So really, listeners, consider multiple streams of income in your life and really consider problems. Maybe problems that people are not solving will be a great opportunity for you to start a new online business. And there's going to be literally millions of new online businesses that solve new problems. Philip solves an interesting problem. Charlie solves an interesting problem. Andrew does. Jim does. Yeah. We're all solving problems. But the problem is, unfortunately, going to get more complex in the future. Yes.
I think Richard and Jim are saying the same thing. I mean, you have to diversify your income. You have to diversify your portfolio. It's so you can easily make those pivots when you need to. If you have multiple streams of income and multiple, you know, your money's in multiple platforms, then no matter what happens in the world, you can easily make a pivot, lean on your right foot instead of your left.
Yeah, Dr. London, I had a question for you. I'm curious how you sort of reconcile the idea of pivoting, which I sort of see as an internal choice that I have to make as a person or as a business owner to do a particular thing or make a specific change, where I'm sort of looking at that idea compared to sort of the abundance manifestation that you had talked about early on in the program, which seems to me to be more of a spiritual, you know, less of a proactive and more of a passive approach. And that may just be my misunderstanding of the process, but can you help me understand how, you know, manifestation of abundance and pivoting might overlap with one another and how they might actually share a commonality rather than maybe being opposing forces?
Yeah, the commonality is it's about expansion. So you, me, everybody in the world, we're changing every second of the day. We live in a world, so we're not in a world of crisis, we're in a world of change and transformation. Mm-hmm. And no matter what philosophy Andrew has or anybody has, everything is all about energy. So pivoting is an expansion. And expansion of the world, it's really, really important. Because, Andrew, the majority of people in the world, they play small. Mm-hmm. In the world that we live in, you can't play small. I'm 4 years old and I'm playing big. By the time I was eight, I had big boy pants on at the age of eight. And so no matter what walk of life you are, if you're 20 years old to 80 or 100 years old, there's plenty of opportunities. But the difference in the 21st century, you have to come from a place of pivoting, but in an expansive way. Yes. So, yes, I've been involved in the metaphysical community my entire life, but I'm a very grounded businessman, an extremely successful businessman, and always have been. And it's because I always thought about life very grounded and that everything was always expanding. So I had to expand with the world. And also, I had to be number one in the world. Mm-hmm. Yes. So my goal, so when I was a little boy, and this will be really important to the listeners, I used to love the merry-go-round. Why did I love the merry-go-round? Because I loved the experience. It made me feel free, expanded me. But guess what? Only one person was able to get the brass ring. When you got the brass ring, you got to go in the merry-go-round free again. So this is the world that I've always lived in. I always get the brass ring because it gives you freedom. So business is really about, not about money. It's not about dollars and cents. And it's really about dollars and S-E-N-S-E, cents, and not cents. And it's about getting the brass ring. Yes, because you enjoy that experience and you want to duplicate the experience. So it's okay to be really wealthy in the world. It's okay. And humans don't understand that. They feel guilt when they're very wealthy. But it's what you do with your money. And the key is, so in the expansion of the 21st century, for all of you, when you're like Philip, he's being of service. Jim is being of service. Charlie is being of service. Andrew is being of service. Andrew is taking a real human approach to law. He's being of service. And that's what really matters in the world. When you're being of service to humanity, like Sharif is, she's being of service to humanity in this show, it causes pivoting our expansion. Yes. And that's great.
What I hear you saying, and this is what I interpreted from Andrew's question and Richard's response, is that when you're going one direction, like the brick and mortar stores, they were forced to shut down. But that energy for their business is still there. So it has to go somewhere. It has to find a direction, because if it doesn't find a direction to go in, that business is going to die. So they find a new way to get the energy to people, to get the products and services. And that new way is virtual. Is that because that's what I got out of what you said, Richard?
Yes. But virtual in my world is real. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because life is really a big giant illusion. So if you're gonna make your life an illusion, it might as well be a beautiful illusion. It might as well be as real. So I have lots of animals because my illusion was to have lots of animals, everybody in harmony. So I made it a reality. So that's another important point, Sharif, that in the world we live now, because people are forced to be in their homes, what are they going to do? They're going to be more creative. So the reality is going to be greater, and it can be greater using the internet. Do you know why the internet, does anybody know why the internet was created?
I think that was
communication for the Defense Department, I thought.
No, not really. So, okay. I was one of the people that forced the government to make the internet public for one reason only. It was the internet's sole purpose was to create a world where humans know no ethnicity. That was the purpose of the internet. It was to bind people together. And now you can talk to people all over the world, and people don't recognize ethnicity anymore. And that's beautiful. So there are a lot of greater purposes for things that have happened, but people just don't. People don't know the real truth. They only know what they believe is the truth. So the internet was created to bridge all humanity, knowing no ethnicity. And it's done a great job in doing that. And that's a beautiful thing. That's why this...
What? Wow. No, I just wanted to mean to cut you off. I was just saying, wow, like that was just very interesting and intriguing. I love Jim's office because I found a desk, but I'm going to have to find a desk in your office too, Richard. We might have to declutter some of that stuff, move that stuff out, and I'm going to come sit down.
Yeah, with you. I need to call Philip.
I'm going to come sit down with you because I have learned a lot. We are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. We only have about 6 minutes left. And this is one of those shows where I'm kind of nervous about going over. But at the end of every show, I love to just allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to our listening audience, to everyone who's watching the show live, as well as everyone who's watching it in the archives, and just let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance. So briefly, we're going to start with you, Richard.
Well, what I want them to take is the thing is, every human being has infinite worth. Infinite worth. Everything is possible. And we're all here for only one reason. You know what that is? To be the best version of our authentic soul. To be the best version of our authentic soul. Wow. Imagine you listeners out there being the best version of your authentic soul. And from Charlie, Jim, Andrew, Sharif, everyone's trying to just do that, be the best version of their authentic soul, to really be of service to humanity. And you're going to see a lot of that in the 21st century. You're going to see people struggling, but you're going to see people, wow, they're going to jump very high above any struggle that's going to happen in the future. Yeah.
I love it. It sounds amazing. Charlie, we didn't get a lot of time with you. I do apologize. It was such a great conversation. Give us some final words, please, Charlie.
Yeah, I think one final thing, this conversation really sparked an idea in me that even in these hard times, we can pivot, but you can also expand, and you can expand what you're doing. And what we're doing at Let's Roam, these things, these games are expansions of what we're doing. And it's an opportunity for you to come back and think about what you want in life and what you want to do and just push forward and push into it. I think it's really a big opportunity, and we can wait till quarantine's over, or you can start now.
Yeah, so please go ahead and send me the information for Sunday. I look for an opportunity to make my son look wacky. My 23-year-old's here with me. So, ooh, I got some wacky ideas for him. Thank you for joining us. Philip, what do you have for us?
Well, first off, I want to say, just the pivoting conversation has been very enlightening, and just kind of taking a deeper look at it. You hear it a lot in the news and all over today. So the idea of, for anyone listening that's an entrepreneur or small business owner, like having those multiple pivots ready and not kind of trying to weather the storm because, you know, there may be more storms coming, like Richard says. So be ready for, you know, this may pass, but there may be future economic issues that you should, learn to pivot and really brainstorm with your team to figure out what to do. And final note for Hoarderly is that we're offering free virtual organizing right now. So just go to our Instagram. And if you want to test it out and see if you can get a little bit more organized, I had to name drop our business. So it's at Hoarderly on Instagram.
That's what we do here. We do a whole lot of name dropping. Even before this, that is one of the lessons that life taught me, is to have multiple streams of income. I was laid off 8 times and I said, I will never, ever put all of my eggs in one basket again. So I do a little bit of this, do a little bit of that. And that's how I proceed. Andrew, what do you have for us?
I think we need to recognize in this time, it's about growth in our business, not change in our business. And you need to use these opportunities to grow and be better and provide more value to people than change what you were doing. I don't think that our business models are bad. I think that all of us need to adapt and use what we have and use this opportunity to make our businesses better and use this opportunity to provide more value to our customers and to other people in our network, and really sort of, you know, bootstrap onto one another to really help one another grow and flourish and prosper. I would love for people to come and visit my website at contigulia.com, contigulia.com. I have a ton of resources on my website for people to review and to read about. And again, sort of take my approach, which is educate yourself about the law now so you don't end up with legal problems down the line.
That was very interesting, but I was kind of curious about one of the things that you said. I'm really big into verbiage and really big into semantics. So I see you making a differentiation between change and growth. But can you grow without change? Because doesn't growth imply that you have to do something different?
I don't think so. I think change is a different direction. I think mm-hmm. growth is a larger component of what you already have. Mm-hmm. And I don't think change is bad. I don't want you to think that in my mind, change is bad. I don't think that. I think looking at this as an opportunity to grow, mm-hmm. I think change can be a component of growth, but I think overall growth is a better, I think it provides more value to not only yourself, but to others than change might.
Excellent answer. I completely agree. Jim, we're back to you.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about pivot and change. And I just say that, you've heard the term new normal. I don't think anybody knows what the new normal is going to be going forward. I think it's going to be defined as we go forward. But I would say the one thing that is going to be key, Andrew talked about growth, how you grow. I think it's being adaptive, being very sensitive to client needs, picking up on trends. And I think with technology, as Richard talked about, we're going to see technological change happen so rapidly in the 10 years. Just the amount of wealth and knowledge that we have today as a result of the internet. I mean, what can you not do on the internet right now? You can type in anything. When it comes to research, I remember back in the days we did research in graduate school on microfiche. I mean, imagine trying to do that. If anybody even has seen one of those machines, they're probably in a museum right now. So I think being adaptive, and I'm quite excited about this because I think it's going to be new innovation, new businesses. And I think those that are successful will adapt. Philip, you talked about how you're changing some of the things that you're doing. All of us are going to be changing as a result of what we've been put through in the last couple months. So I'm very optimistic about the future.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, everyone. I want to thank everyone for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. About an hour ago, I told you we were going to have a very interesting conversation, that these gentlemen were going to bring the knowledge and the entertainment, and I delivered. We all delivered because I learned so much. I like, this is like a weird thing that I do, but I like to show people my show notes sometimes. And like this show, I was just writing and taking notes from, see, Philip knows. It's like taking notes from everything on the show so that I can incorporate it into my life and into my business. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who's watching it in the archives. I definitely appreciate you. Please go ahead and share this show. I know I'm going to share it on all my pages because this was an excellent show. If you are interested in being a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit the website at asharifa.com. Until tomorrow at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.